play that beautiful music. Hello, everybody. A long time no see. Welcome back to Restitching the Tapestry. I hope you are ready for our shenanigans tonight. So,
I'm Ari Whipple.
I am Johnny Winter. But yes, welcome to episode 130. Episode 130. Wow. We're 20 episodes away from 150. How do you feel about that?
We're aging like fine wine.
We are. Like, Ari, I feel like with every episode, we are getting wiser, more refined, but also more stunningly attractive.
That's true. You are getting more stunningly attractive.
You are as well. Are you kidding me?
I'm aging like cheese.
Hey,
the good stinky.
I was gonna say, as cheese ages, that's good. Like cheese and wine, they go hand in hand. Are you the cheese and am I the wine?
I'm good stinky cheese, the good stinky kind.
I think I'm a bottle of Pinot Grigio.
I'm definitely Munster.
Oh my goodness. It's good to be back, everyone. Last week was our off week. Our off week, not oft week. And this week we're going to be talking about fixing people. We have quite a few interesting things to cover in this episode, and I think that we've been looking forward to it for quite a while. But obviously, before we get into doing any of that, what have we been doing? How have we been? What have we been up to?
Oh my God. So I have been suffering lately, not to be like, oh God, everything is blowing up. But I had so much trouble getting my medication the last couple weeks. It has literally been a nightmare. Apparently this is not an isolated case. Like my psychiatrist was saying that a lot of people have been having trouble getting their medication who are mental patient, like have a mental illness. Like with bipolar and with like schizophrenia and stuff. Apparently like it's just really difficult. Like there's a med shortage and it's just that insurance is trying to like kick people off and make it incredibly difficult. I kind of just fell into this area where my insurance was trying to not cover my medication that was very, very necessary, that if I didn't have it, I could potentially suffer seizures if I didn't take it. So because I'm on such a high dosage of it.
Oh my God.
So it was sort of like a scramble to like get even something semblance of getting a medication. And so I got a lower dosage for a few days of a different med that put me into a mental depression. And so I missed my therapy session because I just wasn't aware of what was going on around me. And then it took another like week and a half to get the medication that I needed. And then when they finally gave me my meds, they gave me a giant bottle of pills. I was like, oh my God.
They were like, you're stocked for a while.
They literally gave me like a 90-day supply. And like, I was like, oh, because they did some maneuvering around and they got me like a big, big old bottle of pills. When I first got it, I didn't look in the package itself. I just like put it in my glove box and I was like, I'm just going to leave it in there. But then it was like 2 o'clock in the morning and I was like, oh, I should probably get that out of my car. Cause I still had some because they gave me a partial dosage. So I was going off the partial dosage and I was like, okay, so I should probably get that out of my car. I opened that bitch up and I looked into it and I was like, this is a big old bottle of pills. I'm like, this is like in Hollywood movies when you see people like overdosing on their pills. You see those big old bottle of pills. This is the stuff that they show in Hollywood movies of people overdosing. I was like, this is crazy.
Oh this my is like, God.
Like cartoonishly big bottle of pills.
That's intense.
It was. Anyway, so I got my pills. I got much better and everything worked out great. And I've been doing tarot readings for people, which has been nice.
Been kicking ass on your tarot channel.
Like I reached 1,000 subscribers.
I was going to say, share the good news. You've reached 1,000 subscribers. Your channel has grown this much in the span of what? A year and a half?
Two years, yeah.
That's impressive. That's really, really good.
I've worked really hard on it, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, you're spending a lot of hours, like, doing reading. You're doing readings for individuals as well, so that's a lot of hard work, so I'm really proud of you. Yay!
Anyway, what have you been up to?
Well, this was the second week of the semester, so, like, just work. Today I did some journaling. It was a rainy day today, so I went and I grabbed a little blanket. Aww. I lit a little candle, and I was like, I'm gonna do some journaling, and I did. Last weekend was really busy. Britt and I with a friend went to Kalamazoo to take another friend out for their birthday, and I went to a gay club for the first time in a long time. I did. Well, so I'm not a club person. I've never been a club person, but I actually had a lot of fun. Like,
What club did you go to?
We went to, is it Club Vortex? I think that's what it's called. Well, it was like a drag night. So we did that. And it was like a drag night, like dance performers, etc. And like, we just danced so much. And I've always felt so uncomfortable at clubs and dancing. But I literally had a moment that night where, like, I'm dancing. I was, like, dancing to Kylie Minogue or something, like, the gayest songs possible. And I'm just, like, I'm, like, getting emotional being, like, I'm actually enjoying this. Like, I'm actually feeling wholesome about being in this place and, like, kind of, like, letting my hair down a little bit. You know?
I'm super geeked about this. Can you see my excitement? I'm really excited.
I know. I love it. But so like we didn't get home till like 3 a.m. I got like maybe an hour of sleep, and then we had to drive all the way back home because then we went on a tubing trip with my friends up north.
What?
Ari. Ari.
Living like you're in your 20s.
It's not sustainable. I was dying.
I would expect so. That's really exhausting.
And I was just like, you know, I looked at Britt because Britt was really dying. I was just like, we're not doing that often. If at all anymore. Even when I was in my 20s, I could barely do that. Okay, so I do see some comments here. RP, hello, it's good to see you. You said hello, that Arby. I've never been to a club, and did they play Adam Lambert? I think they did play Adam Lambert once. There was a lot of Adam, Gaga, Kylie Minogue, all sorts of stuff. But it was good.
Yeah.
It was really good. Yeah. I think that's pretty much it, though. I
hope you got caught up on some much needed sleep, though, because that is That's really intense.
It kind of like I mean, mental health wise, if I don't get enough sleep, like that's like the perfect brew for me to have a manic episode. I thankfully did not, because I was really worried there for about a day or so.
One day isn't going to send you over, but like if you make it a regular habit, it could be.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And RP, I can't remember which song it was. It was a very long evening. So current event snapshot. What's been going on lately?
It's talk about been the Burning Man rain.
So it's so much has been happening.
So much rain. So much. We got rain. We got rain in Florida. We got rain in California and the Southwest. It rained in Nevada and Burning Man. So much rain. Rain, rain, rain.
Yeah, well, that's what contributed to what happened at Burning Man. Do you want to talk about what happened over there?
So everybody decided that they were going to gather for the music festival that they always go to. And that usually, because last year at Burning Man, it was too hot. They were like, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine.
Oh, my God. Britt's mom. Hey, Jackie, it's good to see you. And yes, we were all dancing.
So they went to Burning Man and they were like, it's usually too hot because it's the middle of the desert. And then it decided that it was going to rain. And it was really bad rain, like flooded out toilets, you know, cars getting stuck in the mud, people trying to escape, and somebody died.
I know. That's so sad. You know,
that is sad. But the thing about it is when you go out into the middle of the desert, and this is something that I was very cognizant of living in Death Valley. Mm-hmm. When you go out into the middle of nowhere, you take a risk at putting your life in danger. And that's something that you have to be very aware of when you go out into the great nowhere, is that you are taking on a risk. It's sort of like when the submarine guys, is that they went to the bottom of the ocean, which is it is very isolated. It's far away from civilization. It's you are putting your life at risk, and you have to understand that you are taking that risk into your own hands, and that it's far away from civilized society, and that you know, anything can happen. You can get extreme heat without having proper hydration. You have extreme weather pattern changes that can change on a dime. Anything and everything can happen at any given moment. And so you have to be very careful, and you have to prepare for whatever is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it brings us back to the whole conversation about climate change, right? Like, like we're going to continue seeing more situations like this as things worsen. I mean, and we've not had this much rain like across the entire country in decades, hundreds of years even. Like it's really a dire circumstance. Oh, the lead singer of Smash Mouth passed away. What?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Was that today?
No, it was the other day. He died of alcoholism.
I saw that he was on hospice care. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
He hasn't been doing well for quite a while.
Yeah. I remember seeing it go viral periodically where he was like in some controversy and stuff like that with regard to like his behavior and stuff. So,
there's
a lot going on. Just everybody, if you see that there's going to be some inclement weather, be safe. Please be safe.
Yeah. So, that's the thing about, I did a forecast of what was going to happen during the year. And I said that there was going to be a lot of rain this year. Didn't I mention that?
I do remember you mentioning that.
That there was going to be like some stuff about people not being able to get water during this year, and that there was going to be a lot of rain for some reason. Like there was going to be like, problems with drinking water for some reason.
Yeah, like that reading was spot on. And I mean, when was that? Was that like
that was in January? It was in December, and it was in January. I should really post that somewhere again.
Yeah, because honestly, like that's, I mean, it really, it just reflects like the way things are right now. So
because I talked about like stuff about like deep fakes too, and like AI stuff. And that was very,
and look at the AI stuff that's been happening.
Yeah.
Are we ready for the mission statement?
Yes.
I think it's my turn. We live in a dynamic society where social media shapes us by creating greater opportunities for connection. It has led to a developing understanding of the adversity many marginalized communities face, the powers causing the adversity, and those who act as bystanders as atrocities take place in real time. Our goal with this show is to make connections and have challenging conversations about social topics, current events, pop culture, and art. Together, let's weave the threads of understanding with what privilege we have in order to learn, educate, and create in a world that's growing. Mm. Woo.
I love when you read it.
I love when you read it. I always feel like it's very, it's like listening to Meryl Streep read. It's just very articulated.
No, when you read it, you sound like a news broadcaster. It's always so good.
Oh, stop. Stop. You're making me blush, Ari. Oh my God. Our energy is so zany tonight and I love it. So our topic tonight is being the fixer. Okay. Now, you hear this term a lot in conversations about like relationships, even sometimes friendships, where like one person takes on this role of like wanting or even feeling the need to be the fixer in that relationship, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be a healthy thing. Sometimes it can be a toxic thing. So I guess to start us off tonight, let's talk about our history. Like, have you ever been the fixer or have you had the desire to be the fixer? Like, how has that manifested itself in your life?
So in several points in my life, especially with like family, there's always been this desire, especially with like my mom, wanting to fix certain habits and behaviors with her, and wanting her to just be the best version of herself. Mm-hmm. There was also like with my father, because my father was when he was alive, was very staunch, very conservative Republican. And so I thought if I could just say the right thing or do the right thing, I could get him to possibly just like see my point of view and like fix his opinion about certain things. And obviously that never happened by the end of his life. But there's this desire to, fix him, of, you know, cure him of his, opinions and habits, that it's sort of like he's in the wrong about his opinions and attitudes. And that it's just that he hasn't had, the proper, education, and that he, cause we always talk about it on the show that, if people just have the proper education, then, they can just see the light and they can just, come to a higher understanding about
something. Or just be better people in general.
or just be better people in general. Yeah. So it's this desire to bring somebody into the light of understanding about things. It translated into these relationships that I had with my parents often would translate into romantic relationships that I had, that I would get into relationships with people who I considered to be like puzzles, people mm-hmm. who I was trying to figure out and understand. And when I found things with them that would have traits that I found would be less than desirable, I'd be like, if I could just help them, be the best version of themselves and like fix certain habits about themselves, then I could help them be the best version of themselves that maybe because I had things about myself that I wanted to fix and I would work on fixing those things about myself. I could help them fix the things that they didn't, maybe that I didn't like about them or that things that weren't ideal about them. Maybe we could become the best versions together.
Right. Now that really hits close to home for me because I feel like, especially when I was in college, that's kind of like the mentality that I adopted, especially when it came to dating. For me, like it did begin though, like the seeds of it began with like family trauma. So here we go with that. I've been very transparent about the fact that I had one grandma who was wonderful to me and then one grandma who was very emotionally abusive. And My emotionally abusive grandmother kind of fed off from pitting people against one another. Mm-hmm. So she would pit like her kids, like my mom, like her siblings against each other all the time. And like she would pit like cousins against one another, like my brother and I against, like she loved seeing people just being discordant and all of that jazz. And she would always say this kind of like really disturbing thing to me. She'd be like, "Donnie, you're so much like me. Like we wear our hearts on our sleeves." And that like got in my head when I was a kid. To the extent where as I grew up, like my biggest motivation was to not be like her, right? To the point where like instead of thriving off making people discordant with one another, I wanted to create harmony. If like, so I was like very good at like diffusing situations. I was very good at getting people together to talk about like their issues and so on and so forth. And there was a certain point where, and you know, like how many of the things that I dealt with, like in high school and in college, like I was minimized quite a bit. So it became this apparent thing where like the only thing that I was recognized for and not minimized around was the fact that I could bring people together. Mm-hmm. So that kind of got in my head too. And I was just like, oh, like this is something that I can use to actually get people to care about my existence. Yeah. That's when it became something that I would obsess over, right? So like I would often seek people out who were at odds with someone or who felt broken in some way. Because like you were saying, like I had also like in therapy worked on myself, and
it's not that I necessarily thought that people were broken or that there was something that they were like less mm-hmm. than. It's that,
oh no,
it's just that it's just because in a partnership, when you get in a relationship or when you become friends with people, it's that, you know, you want to grow together as people. You want you want to become better people together. And so it's that, but the thing about it is that you have to, in a relationship to become better together, you have to want to grow together. Yeah. And the thing about it is that I realized that I had made decisions for these other people about mm-hmm. what their problems were and what they needed to fix. And they didn't come to these decisions on their own. And that was the problem that made it so that I was the fixer. So part of it is that I had these toxic qualities of that I decided these things for these people about what they needed to mm-hmm. fix. So some of it is that it was some of my impetus on me in that I made these decisions about them, about what they mm-hmm. needed to fix about themselves. So some of it, because we have this question about, about the narcissism, how does the narcissism play into that dynamic that you can fix somebody? Is that it's narcissistic of me to think that they need to be fixed, is that there's certain things about, because maybe they don't want to fix certain things about themselves. Maybe they want to keep certain attitudes because, there are certain behaviors or attitudes that maybe they're just not self-aware about those things. You know, it's that I just decided certain things and without having that conversation with them that maybe they wanted to fix certain attitudes and behaviors about themselves or that they wanted to do certain things or better themselves in some way. And so it was sort of like, maybe it was sort of manipulative on my part. I don't know, but it's just sort of like, but it, you know, like the thing with my mom is that the thing that I'm always trying to correct about my mom's behavior is that I'm trying to have her fix certain racist tendencies that she's grown up with and certain behaviors that she's grown up with. And, she's not always willing to put the work in to fix that behavior. So it's sort of like on my part, I'm pushing that on her without her doing the initial work herself. And mm-hmm. so it's sort of like, it's sort of like pulling a horse to water and forcing it to drink, that she has to do the internal work herself. And it's sort I totally, because we kind of take on
the possibility of thinking that we should do the work for them to relieve them of that burden. So like going back to the whole broken thing, like I think the reason I use that term is because when I was at that age, people always thought of me as being a broken person. Mm-hmm. So I like in my philosophy back then, which was not healthy for me mental health wise, I kind of took that and ran with it. I was like, if I'm this broken person and I have this awareness that I am, then I can go and help other people or be there for other people who feel broken as well. That was kind of narcissistic of me though, because then it turned into me being like, oh, I have this very empathetic capability, but I'm using it because I don't feel seen at all. And this is my only sense of worth to other people, right?
Yeah.
That's when it became like very problematic for me, because I would always make like this effort that I would perceive I was making. Mm-hmm. And then when I didn't get anything at all reciprocated, it kind of brought me back to square one, you know?
Right.
And then it left me with that like reminder of like, Donnie, like this comes back down to your self-worth, right? Like you don't have any self-worth right now, but you expect to supply other people or support what self-worth they have. You can't pour water out of an empty jug.
Right. Like,
that's not how it works.
I know. And that's the thing is that it's my toxic trait that I've worked on over years.
That's why we get along so well, because in college we had like very similar toxic traits.
And sometimes sometimes with my family, I still like, it's not that I do it actively anymore. I definitely have tried to like mitigate and be more forgiving to my mom about it. But it's definitely something that I still definitely struggle with, that it's just like, if I do say the right thing or do the right thing, or if I turn the puzzle just the right way, it'll get them to say, mm-hmm. think the right.
Yeah.
If people are like Rubik's Cube, and if I just turn the puzzle the right way, then they'll be in the right pattern, and they'll be able to go on their way and be, you know, happy and well functioning, mm-hmm. and they'll be, you know, all part of the world, and that I don't have to, you know, worry about them, or, you know, worry what other people think about them, or, you know, mm-hmm. worry that they're going to get themselves into trouble, or, you know, and the thing about it is that, you know, they've been functioning up until this point just fine. And that,
yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. And I think this is a realization that we've come to as we've gotten older too. Our former need to be the fixer, I mean, it did have some like narcissistic qualities to it, but there are people who are actually full on narcissists, mm-hmm. who feed off people with those tendencies.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because like they know that those people are going to do whatever they can to make things right, make things better.
Well, because they keep you stuck in those. Because what it was is I would get stuck in these relationships where it was sort of like the carrot of, sure, baby, you can fix me. You can fix me all you want. Mm. And it's sort of like they held that as like a carrot of, you know, I'm a do-gooder. So I try to help them, and I try to make myself available to them. And I always, you know, be kind to them. And I always care about their well-being. And I'm always like putting myself forward and, you know, using that to their advantage to, feed their ego and feed into them. And so they would use that as a way to like eventually like devalue me and you know that I'm not good enough for you know, why haven't you fixed me? Or, you know, what is wrong with you kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, so like, I don't think I've mentioned my relationships yet, but so 2013 was probably one of the darkest years of my life. So I lived up north in like rural Michigan. Like if you wanted to date another, if you wanted to be in a gay relationship, you basically had to travel. So like I gotten into a relationship with this person who lived about 50 miles away. Drastically different person, which was fine, but they really didn't have the means to sustain themselves. So I kind of quickly became that sustaining force. And I kind of convinced myself that I would be worthwhile to this person if I had something to provide them, or if I had some means to sustain, like I wouldn't be left. I wouldn't be abandoned if I was able to do that. And it got so bad that like this person was just taking and taking and taking, you know, to the, like where like, they got in legal trouble even at a certain extent, and I paid their legal fees and everything. Like it was like really, really bad until I like had a moment where I was just like, Donna, you're spiraling into like this, like you thought you could fix this person and be, you know, good for them, but really you're not, you're just harming yourself. And I ended up breaking up with that person. And that's actually what motivated me to go back and get my master's degree way back then, interestingly enough. But like, it was a mess. Like 2013, Donnie, was a mess. That was probably like the last significant point in my life.
That sounds awful. That sounds terrible.
Yeah. It's where that's the last significant point in my life where I lost myself to that fix it mentality, right?
Yeah. I finally lost my ability to fix it when it was a couple different situations. There was a situation with a LARPer. Do you know what LARPing is?
It's live, yes,
action,
I do.
Live action role play. Mm-hmm. It was in college, and I had been talking to a random LARPer, and he had decided that he was going to play with my emotions as a trigger warning, by saying that he was going to hurt himself physically. And so he was like, because he wanted to get a reaction out of me, and he wanted me to, you know, tell him, no, don't do it. And, you know, be like comforting him. And so, what I did, because I don't, I was really upset about this because I wasn't near him. I was several states away from this person. I was not nearby them. So what I did was I called, I found the local police number for them, and I called the local police, and I told them to go do a wellness check on them. And he was embarrassed, that, you know, offended that I would do something like that. And I said, you know, you don't tell somebody that you're going to do something like that unless, you know, you're asking for help. And he said he had roommates around him, and he said that they were all really upset with him that he had done something like that.
I can only imagine how you must have felt having that person's. I've been in relationships where I've had like people say something like that to me, you know, to either prevent me from leaving them or something like that. Where
I've had people do that too. Yep. Several times. This happened a lot.
It's really messed up. Like it got like, so I had an ex do that. Like even it was like a year after we had broken up, and they kept messaging me periodically being like, you know, I'm feeling like I want to unalive myself because you're not with me, blah, blah. Like, it got to a point where, like, I literally had to tell, like, this person's family members and be like, hey, can you check on this person? Like, they're saying this to me. It's really worrying me. I don't know what their mental state is. Of course, they got upset because I said something, but it's like, this is your well-being we're talking about. Like, yeah. Like, that's not something to joke about, you right. know?
I had an ex pretend to take pills in front of me, and I had to like knock the pills out of their hands because they said that they were totally upset about what I had done. That was really hard. And they used that against me. I'm not sure what their mental state was at that time. But they were very manipulative and they would do things like that. They were very mean to me and they would do things like that. That's really hard for me to talk about that they would do stuff like that. That relationship, I was never really sure what the truth was with that person. That relationship really did a number on me. That person was never really honest about who they were as a person. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of trust issues after that relationship. Because they would do things like, they would be yelling at me and like crying and stuff. And like, we would be in arguments and stuff. And, then our roommate would walk in and they would start laughing and joking around with their roommate, like right away. Wow. And so like, I never really understood like, what the real person was. Like, we would be in the middle of, we were fighting, we would fight all the time. And, we would be in the middle of a fight, like arguing, like in the parking lot of somewhere. And one of their friends would walk by and they would be like, hey, like the flip of the person. So I never really knew who they actually were as a person. Like,
yeah, that sounds like it almost sounds like that person didn't want other people to see them in a vulnerable emotional position, regardless what that emotion was.
But it was sort of like they weren't honest about their feelings with me either. Right.
Because absolutely.
It was never like, because if you can change your emotions that quickly, what is the true emotion that you're experiencing? You know what I mean?
Right. Is it all an act or is it something genuine? Right.
Right. Because if you can cry on cue, is it like, because they never really cried either. It was like they would do this and then they would like, oh, hi. And it was sort of like they were never really crying. And
they
were
expect to get an Oscar for that acting? Because I don't think so.
I play it over in my head sometimes. And it made me very emotionally numb, a lot of it. I remember I would go through these periods I was going to go to work one day and I just sat down and I stared out the window and I sat there for 8 hours and wow. I didn't move for 8 hours because I couldn't move. And I called my job and said I couldn't come in that day because I sat out the window and I sat looking out the window and I didn't do anything all day. And I don't know what happened. It was like that a lot. I just didn't know what to do. And
when you're in a position like that, it can really impact like your mental health, where you're able to like engage and interact.
But you know, you've been in situations like that too.
Yeah, I have. Like, I think for me, like, it's very much like you were describing, that numbness. Like, I, I felt that way too. Like, I know when I was sharing about that person who threatened to unalive themselves, like I kind of got it in my head after that relationship where I was just like, I don't want any, like, if this person is feeling what they're feeling, if it is a genuine feeling, because with that person, I couldn't determine either, because it was, you never would know. I kind of convinced myself that I wouldn't allow someone else to fall for me that hard if that was in fact the way they were feeling, right? But like, I think I got out of that mentality at a certain point, because I realized that I was kind of I was like kind of sabotaging myself in a way too, because it was just me fearing being close to people at that point in time. Have you ever had anybody want to fix you?
No. Actually, yes. My sister Jessica. After I came home from Seattle, I was, after my mental breakdown, I was a zombie, and I was a drooling mess. And I think that there was a state at which there was a sense of, we've got to get Randy back to being their old self. And there's a sense of wanting to make me independent again and wanting to make me normal again. So I think that it kind of got me into a codependent relationship with my sister, in that we spiraled into she became a caretaker for a long time, and that I sort of became like learned helplessness, because I had been so on medications that sedated me, and so I was, and I, because I had fallen so hard after Seattle, there was a sense of being afraid of the world again, of being, that it was sort of like I regressed back to being like a teenager, and that I was like scared to do things for myself, and that I had to relearn how to do things for myself again. And that that I was scared to fail, just scared to do normal things for myself, like set up doctor's appointments and, you know, go to offices and you know, advocate for myself and do certain things. It was very difficult to get back to that again. I'm there now, but, you know, it's, sometimes I still need help to do things. There was a sense of that my sister felt like she needed to fix me. And I remember feeling helpless, that I was like not doing good enough or not striving hard enough, or that I was, you know, that I was sleeping too much, or that I wasn't active enough, or that I wasn't, you know, the good little mental patient, or that I wasn't helping around the house enough, or, you know, and it was sort of like, I was trying my best, but I was so tired, and I was so, you know, I was, and she would get so mad at me, and it was because we had this codependent relationship, and it was that she wanted something out of me that I wasn't able to give.
Yeah. Not to mention, like, you were literally still healing from that experience that you had gone through. And I don't think that we really emphasize that enough tonight either. Like, when you're healing from like a relationship or that type of experience, like, we don't always grant ourselves the grace to make that time, you know, because like there's always like this expectation of like, you immediately need to be who you were. You immediately need to get through something, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, sometimes it takes a while, right? Let's see. Okay. I want to check the comments really quickly. RP says, I'm a people pleaser. I hate conflict. And if there's one in any type of relationship I have, I agonize over it and I really want to fix it. I can be that way too sometimes. So let's see. RP also says, I do want to fix conflicts in relationships. Sophia's here. Sophia. It's good to see you. Merlin Public Media, my friend Mike is here. How are you? It's good to see you.
Mike.
But no, like, I think we should also specify, like, that it's healthy to have some degree, like, it's okay to want to, like, help people and fix people, like, so long as you're not compromising them or yourself.
Right. It's that you're not overstepping boundaries and that people want to work on them. Because the thing about it is, and that's what I said, is that it's okay to want to help people change as long as they want to make that change within themselves, that you're growing together and that you're growing in your relationships. That's the thing, because it's normal in relationships that people grow and change. Like that's a normal part of relationships. But the thing about it is that what the narcissism of somebody who is a fixer is that the other person isn't willing or wanting to make a change.
Right. Exactly.
Or or even able to make that change.
Yeah, they may not be at the point. Exactly. Or they could also be that type of person that feeds off that energy, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, because like they know that whatever they do or don't do, like that other person is going to continually invest energy, right? Even at their own expense. So like speaking of, we did talk about narcissism earlier, but there is, we do have a question about like the savior complex. And I think that definitely is an extension of narcissism.
Well, there's the savior complex, and there's also the martyr complex, like involved with that too.
Ooh, let's talk about those.
So we have the savior complex of like, you know, if I help this person, you know, I'm saving them, and I'm going to be this big hero who's done this person a great benefit. But there's also like the martyr complex of like, if I help this person, you know, if they aren't able to fix themselves, they can martyr themselves. And so like, it's sort of like this back and forth dynamic of, you know, if they fail at fixing themselves, they're allowed to be the martyr. But if I don't help them, it's sort of like this weird dynamic of, I can keep trying and they can keep, you know, well, why can't you fix me? You know,
right.
The martyrdom, you know, of.
Oh, martyrdom is so complex. So like my understanding is like the savior complex is often about like the person who's the savior feeling this need to be needed in some way.
Right.
And then the martyr complex is largely based on power, right? Mm-hmm. Like someone will martyr themselves if something is done that, or if they're not appeased, they can weaponize that and martyr themselves as though they are the one being wronged and kind of turn it around, right? Okay. Ooh, I've been in situations like that before, and it's really, it's really almost impossible to reason with those types of people too.
Right.
Because like they have their own justifications and logic and perceptions of a situation. So, ooh, that's interesting. We could do like a whole episode on martyr complexes versus savior complexes. But at the end of the day, like if like a person is feeling like a savior complex or anything like that, like it's always going to be about what's motivating that person, right? Like, are they motivated because they want the accolades of being that hero, right?
Well, or and then the altruism. The dynamic of the relationship involved, like, you know, if it's a woman trying to save a man, you know, if in the cishet relationships, it's that, you know, you little homemaker has saved her happy little, you know, her husband from, you know what I mean? Like
the little homemaker
has saved her husband from, you know, tamed the wild beast, you know, saved her husband from the ills of the world, you know, because he isn't able to connect to his emotions and he isn't able to, you know, connect to these higher things. So she does all of the emotional work for him by trying to fix him because that's usually what it is that we have these tendencies in society that men are uncivilized creatures that need to be civilized by women, and that women are domesticating their husbands and training them to be the proper husbands. There's also a sense of that men will train the perfect girlfriends by dating younger women, molding their perfect girlfriends into the model girlfriend for them. So it's an interesting dynamic that you have here.
That's absolutely true. And we could even take it even further. Like if we look at marginalized communities, like even the LGBTQ plus community, there are certain dynamics.
You have the white savior complex.
The white savior complex, the token gay complex, where there's so many different things that could, that go in that direction, right? Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever been love bombed before and then led into a relationship where the person stopped living up to those expectations?
Of being a good partner? Yeah, that's part of the fixing. So it's sort of like they live up to this, ideal, I can be the best person you want me to be. But then they fall into that, well, I need to be domesticated first. So then they fall into that area of, well, I can't maintain this lifestyle. I need to work on fixing myself. But you need to fix me. It's sort of like that carrot, I'm going to show.
See, it's not you, it's me.
It's sort of like, this is how good I could be, but you have to work on fixing me. It's that carrot of, I could be this good person, but I can't maintain it all the time. It's not a sustainable lifestyle. You have to work on fixing me. Can't you fix me, baby?
No, that's absolutely true. I think I've been in situations like that before too, where I think my biggest learning experience is realizing that I'm not always going to get in return what I put out. Right? Because we all have different expectations of output versus receiving. And like, I used to associate that with kind of fixing, like where I'd be like, if I put out more and more and more, if I give 120%.
If I just call them every day, if I just give them my emotional energy, if I just give them every little piece of myself and my attention and my time and everything of myself, maybe they will fix themselves and love me back in the way that I want them to. And maybe they will be that ideal partner that I want them to be.
It reminds me of that video that you made a long time ago. The one that you made in the bathroom where you were like,
You were
like, to think that they have ownership over my time, over my body. And I was just like, yeah, like that was such, like that was so insightful. Because that's really what it is.
You want me to repost that video? I would repost that video for you.
It would make my soul flutter like a butterfly if you did. I think it's so difficult to kind of like get out of like that thought process. I would say that for me, therapy has helped me considerably. Like it's helped me kind of like remind myself that I am my own person and my level of output doesn't need to be 120%. Does not need to be that. And that it's okay for people to have varying levels of reciprocation, right? As long as, there's communication about that, right? What toll does it take on mental health for you to try to fix somebody? What does it do for the person you're trying? Well, I mean, we've kind of already touched on that, right?
Well, what it does is it trauma bonds you to that person, because when you're trying to get that that dopamine rush of trying to fix that person, of waiting for them to, show up for you in the way that you are showing up for them, it's sort of like that as they're devaluing you and they're telling you you're not good enough, and that telling you, why can't you just fix, or just not showing up for you in the way that you want them to, or doing the thing that you you know, you're asking them to do. And it's that frustrating process of why is this not working in the way that I'm hoping it to. It's that because with my sister, it was a codependent relationship. So it was that trauma bonding relationship of going back and forth, of her frustratingly getting angry at me and us having these explosive fights, you know. Mm-hmm. But then with the narcissistic relationship, it's that trauma bonding of I would send texts. I got out of the relationship with these narcissistic exes, but then every so often I would miss that because I had trauma bonded to them. I would miss mm-hmm. that dopamine rush of the, you know, the adrenaline rush of the fights because of the cortisol that was being released in the stress related of the fights. Because you get addicted to that cortisol, having an
absolutely
body. So I would go back to them every so often because it's sort of like you miss that rush of having the arguments. And so it'd be like, you know,
So it's interesting just to think of like how it's just chemistry when you think about it, because like, oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, because it's like, we get a rush from like those fights, but we also get a rush from like being recognized and being seen, being acknowledged for being necessary in a situation, right?
It's not that I miss the rush of the fights. It's that I would miss the rush of trying to fix them and trying to fix, and then it would end up, it wasn't necessarily that I missed the rush of the fights, but it was that I knew it would end up in fights, and that later on I realized it was that I was setting myself up for failure.
Right.
And so now I know that everything leads to that end. And so now mm-hmm. I just know not to go back to
this. Yes. Now we know how to cut that off before it even becomes a thing. Right?
It's bad for it. It's just, you know, I know exactly what they're going to say. I know exactly what they're mm-hmm. going to do because I know that it's just going to end up in a fight, and it's going to end up in cortisol release, and it's going to end up in, you know, bad news because that's the way it's been up until this point, and that they're mm-hmm. going to say things that are hurtful and mean and rude and wrong. And why do that to myself?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's,
there's no fixing in them.
It's taken so many years for us to get to this point, but we've gotten here.
So many years. It's been some of the relationships have taken 10 years for me to even, actually 15 years where I have gone, if I do this, if I go down that road, I had to learn that lesson. If I talk to this person, if I interact with this person, then it's going to be, if I try to fix this person, then there's no fixing them.
Yeah. No, it's like, it reminds me of an ex that I had like that, who they would, like, I would go back to them, but then they, like, at a certain point I would cut myself off, but then they would come back to me and deliver this beautiful soliloquy apology of like, I know the error of my ways, etc. And then it just kind of would lead back into that cruel cycle again. Mike says, this is the first episode of this that I have caught. Sadly, Juanita is calling for me. Well, it was great to have you here.
Nice having you.
And I hope that you guys have a good night. Yep, we do our episodes usually every Thursday, so don't hesitate to come back. But no, like, and it got to a certain point where, like, I had to realize that there's always, like, that process, right? Like, for people, especially if they're really manipulative, like, they will come back and they will try to kind of like woo you back in.
Yeah.
You know, and then you have to be like, no, no, not doing that. Not doing that. Oh, my goodness. So, man, we've covered a lot of ground tonight, haven't we?
But that's why I have, that's why you can't, some people you just cannot be friends with. Some people you cannot go back to. Some people you can, you just have to have them blocked. You just have to not look, you know, don't text the ex. Just don't text them. Don't do it for your own safe mental benefit. Just do not let them back into your life. Sometimes curiosity killed the cat and satisfaction definitely did not bring them back.
Right. I know, like, don't text them. Like, I know it's really hard and sometimes it's impossible to avoid this, but don't look at their social media as well. That's something that used to get me all the time. Sometimes still does to this day. Because you just like to check on people, right? And what they're doing. But, you know, the past is the past. And, like, we've gotten to the point of we fortified ourselves to be the people who we are now, right? And I think that we deserve to honor the people that we've become by not going back to the people from before. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right.
So if you feel yourself wanting to be a fixer, how do you go about addressing that need?
Take up a craft. Get a puppy, get a dog, get a cat, you know, get a pet.
Get a pet. Therapy might help too. Like, that was helpful for me. Therapy is very often pretty helpful.
I hate to say it, but, like, you can't fix people. You can fix doors. You can fix a painting. You can fix a craft. You can't fix people because people are just going to be who they are. And you can fix yourself. You can do a lot of self-improvement. Become the best version of yourself. Enjoy who you are.
Find somebody who... It's interesting that you mentioned different art forms. I think that we assume that we can fix people like that Japanese ceramic, like filling like the cracks in teacups with gold. Like, you can't fill people with gold.
And, like, find somebody who you want to grow with that is going to change and grow with you. And you can do stuff together that wants to work on themselves and, you know, encourage them to be who they are and change and grow with you, but don't force them to grow, you know, as a person. Let them be on their own and do things on themselves. And, like, don't make them change. Let them do things on their own. And, like, you know, help them if they ask, help them then and do things, encourage them to be the best version of themselves. Like, don't, you know, make them change for you and or just decide that you're going to fix them. Like, let them do it on their own.
You know, I think that's
people will surprise you.
They will. They will either reveal their true intentions or they will genuinely surprise you. I think that's, like, the perfect spot to conclude this evening. This has been a great I mean, they're always great conversations. This is especially great. So, well, my friends, we both hope that you have a wonderful rest of your evening. And tune back in next week. And I think our topic next week is gratitude. We're talking about gratitude. Woo.
Gratitude.
Woo. Woo. All right. We love you guys. Have a good rest of your night. And we will talk to you soon. Bye.